It's Andy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
I'm Sheriff Ron Hickman, and I have the sad duty to report the murder of a Harris County Sheriff's Department deputy earlier this evening, Deputy Darren H. Goforth, 47-year-old, 10-year veteran of the Harris County Sheriff's Department, was literally gunned down at a service station just down the road in what appears to be an unprovoked execution-style killing of a police officer. Strikes us all at the heart of public service. I'm joined by our District Attorney Devin Anderson, the Texas Rangers, the U.S. Marshal's Office, the FBI, and a host of Harris County Sheriff's employees to let you know that we will hunt this person down and do our best to bring that person to justice. Deputy Goforth was refueling his vehicle and returning to his car from inside the convenience store when, unprovoked, a man walked up behind him and literally shot him to death. In what you can imagine is a very difficult situation. We know that Deputy Goforth leaves behind a wife and two children, and our hearts go out to them. I think it's fitting that we're gathered here in the parking lot of a church, because at times like this, I think it's important to ask for the prayers of our community, for this deputy, his family, and our department family.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. That, of course, happened Friday night. This is Tuesday. We haven't had a chance to really talk about it. The latest in a series of shootings, murders, really, of American policemen by, you know, I think undoubtedly inspired by the hostility that's being stirred up among the black community. We're going to talk about that a bit, but I want to give you an example for a second. The marchers from Black Lives Matter were in Minnesota at a state fair. And with a police escort, they're marching down the street over the weekend, and this is what they say. Let's listen to cut five.
Blanket, fry like bacon, pigs in a 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 blanket.
Right, they're carrying a sign that says Black Lives Matter, and what they're chanting is pigs in a blanket, fry 'em like bacon. And they have a police escort. And that's the stunning part of it. And so Sheriff Ron Hickman, you heard in the first clip, he's the sheriff in charge of the county in near Houston, where the shooting took place on Friday night. And the deputy sheriff was gunned down. 15 times he was shot. And so Sheriff Ron Hickman had more words to say the next time he stepped up to the mic. Let's listen.
Our system of justice absolutely requires law enforcement be present to protect our community. So at any point when the rhetoric ramps up to the point where calculated, cold-blooded assassination of police officers happen, this rhetoric has gotten out of control. We've heard Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. Well, cops' lives matter too. So why don't we just drop the qualifier and just say lives matter?
All right, short but sweet, but that's what he said. And then, of course, David Clark, who is the sheriff, Milwaukee County Sheriff, who has been African-American, eloquent, not, you know, that shouldn't matter, but it matters because we're talking about Black Lives Matter. I wish we were at a time when we didn't have to describe one another by our color, but by our, in our citizenship. We are Americans who love this country. Nevertheless, Sheriff David Clark had his own remarks, and here they are.
I am too pissed off tonight to be diplomatic about what's going on, and I'm not going to stick my head in the sand about it. I said last December that war had been declared on the American police officer led by some high-profile people, one of them coming out of the White House, one coming out of the United States Department of Justice. And it's open season right now. There's no doubt about it.
All right, open season right now. No doubt about it. Well, joining us is, of course, someone that you've gotten to know through the show, and he's a friend of mine that certainly his accolades are endless. It's being a friend of mine is not very important in the scheme of things, but Professor John Lott was at the University of Chicago when I first met him. But he's an academic. He has been an academic at some of the most prestigious Ivy League schools in the country, and interestingly enough, found himself doing research on the use of guns, which was not very politically correct at the university level. And so John has gone on to found an organization called Crime Prevention Research Center, and has had great success in this regard. There's a need for what he does. He provides statistics and information that disprove really so much of what the left is saying about gun control and gun use. And he joins us this morning. Good morning, Professor Lott. How are you?
Oh, great. Great to talk to you, Sandy. By the way, David Clark is on our board.
Is he really?
So, yeah.
Well, that makes sense because he's a real champion. Impressive in every way. All right, let's talk about, there's so many shootings to choose from. But let's go to Houston. That was, well, there was another shooting last night, wasn't there, John?
Yeah, I mean, you lose count at some point.
Yeah, there was a policeman was shot. You know what? I said that. It just came through my mind. I don't even know where it was. But the one in in Houston on Friday night is probably the most recent, most tragic example of what's going on in the country. What do we know about the shooter's criminal history?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, this individual had a long criminal history, but, you know, I'm not sure that differentiates him from some of the other ones that have done attacks on police recently.
The reason I asked, John, is because I know that, you know, Texas is it's open carry, right? They're not conceal and carry, open carry.
All the states, you can concealed carry to at least some extent. 42 of them are what one calls right to carry states, or 10 of those don't even require that you have a permit. And then there are 8 states which are may issue, which you have to demonstrate need to some local public official like a judge or a sheriff. So those are more restricted. But all the states you can carry concealed to at least some extent.
Okay, but the open carry, Arizona's open carry, right? Is Texas?
Texas just became an open carry state. It was one of only 5 states that had previously banned open carry.
But still, there have to be restrictions on who can carry guns. And so criminals, I mean, the fact that he has a criminal history, this shooter, this murderer, how would that have affected him getting a gun? He obviously had an illegal gun. Is that a proper conclusion?
No, I think that's clear. Look, people seem to believe that just because you pass a law that says there'll be background checks for people who have criminal records or other types of records, mental illness, that somehow that's going to stop these guys from getting guns, it's simply not serious. When I recently was doing an interview with Keaton Kirk and, you know, talked about a difficult person to explain this stuff to, but I'm basically saying, if you really believe somebody's a danger to others, let's say with mental illness, you want to lock them up. Going and simply saying that they can't buy a gun through a background check, how difficult would it be for her and her staff, let's say, to go and buy illegal drugs? And who do you think sells these drugs? It's basically drug gangs. And what do drug gangs have? They have weapons in order to go and protect their valuable property that's there. So if you can go and buy drugs from them, how hard do you think it is to go and buy guns from them? And so, you know, the notion that you're going to be able to keep criminals from being able to buy drugs or guns, this doesn't seem very plausible to me. The government spent a huge amount of effort and resources to try to stop, you know, the sale of illegal drugs in the United States. And it doesn't seem like we've been particularly successful in doing that. And the problem is that for many of these laws that you end up passing, you actually end up disarming law-abiding citizens. So about 99% of the people who are stopped as a result of background checks are law-abiding citizens who should have been able to buy a gun. They're false positives. Probably one of the best examples of this in a slightly different context is the late Senator Ted Kennedy. There were 5 times when he was on the no-fly list. I assume somebody like the president wouldn't count that as 5 times we stopped a terrorist from flying. But that's the way they count it when they want to go and talk about, you know, how wonderful the background checks are for guns. They'll say 2.3 3 million prohibited people have been stopped, and that's simply false. Almost virtually all of those are law-abiding citizens who should have been able to buy guns, who were prevented because the background check said, well, you have a name similar to someone that we really want to stop. And the problem is that you have law-abiding citizens, maybe for most of them it's an inconvenience, but for some small significant percentage of those 2.3 million, they may have really needed a gun quickly for self-defense, and they're stopped because the background check system is stopping the wrong people.
It's interesting. I haven't heard so much, maybe it's happened, but I don't ever hear cries for gun control when policemen are shot. It's when we have these, school shootings. It's when, like the shooting last week of the two reporters in Virginia, and that's when the outrage. It's not an outrage over a policeman being shot. Now, that's really something we should to stop and think about. But let's. I'm going to come back to the Texas shooting, but let's move back to the Virginia one since you're talking about gun control and regulations. You know, Allison Parker is shot, and her coworker Adam Ward shot and killed. Allison has a father, Andy Parker, who she described in a video as a former actor on Broadway. So now her dad, even the evening of the shooting, is going on television talking about he's going to work for gun control. And as a matter of fact, he and his wife appeared on television just this week. And let's stop and listen just for a second to what they had to say. And I'm trying to find the cut here. It's at cut 8.
We cannot be intimidated. We cannot be pushed aside. We cannot be told that this fight has been fought before and that we're just one more grieving family trying to do something. Because I've looked in the camera on other interviews and I've said, if you are a parent, if you're a mother, if you have children, can you look your child in the eye and say, we are willing to allow you to be collateral damage in order to keep what some people perceive as their constitutional rights?
I hate to say that we're the, the fresh face of gun violence, but if we have to be, at least I think we can affect the change, and we are going to affect the change. And it would be Allison would be really mad at me if I didn't take this on. And I promise you, and I've said this time and again, these people are messing with the wrong family. We are going to affect a change, and it's going to happen. And we need people like Senator Murphy and Governor McAuliffe who are courageous enough to stand with us.
All right, so here we go again, John, with personal family members. This goes back, to a Reagan age shooting. I can't think of his name right offhand, but the family using their grief now to try to alter the Second Amendment. So now here we have Andy Parker and his wife, the parents of Allison Parker, pledging that they're going to get into the fight. It's hard to argue against, parents who have just lost their child.
No, I mean, it's tragic. But look, we all want to save lives. The problem is that a lot of the laws that they try to push have absolutely nothing to do with this tragedy or other ones. Within 2 hours of the tragic shooting last Wednesday of the journalist there, you had politicians like Governor McAuliffe coming out and talking about expanded background checks. You had Hillary Clinton. You had gun control groups coming out for expanded background checks, which would regulate the private transfer of guns. Well, first of all, it had nothing to do with the case. The guy bought a gun from a federally licensed dealer. He went through a background check. And so, it wouldn't have stopped this particular case that was there. I think the reason why they push it is that it adds a cost to the transfer of a gun. In D.C., the expanded background checks add about $200 to the price of transferring a gun. In New York State, it adds about $80. In Washington State, it adds $60. And I think the whole point of this is not that they believe that it's relevant for reducing crime or stopping these public shootings, because every case that the president's trotted out to justify these laws also has nothing to do with it. It's just to make it costly for people to be able to get guns as a way of reducing the number of people who own guns. They phrase it in terms of safety and the need to go and stop something like the shooting last week, but they know it has nothing to do with it. And I think they just do it because it's their way of taxing, implicitly taxing people having guns for self-defense.
My guest is Professor John Lott, and the organization that he has created and leads is Crime Prevention Research Center. By the way, their website is crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org. I get that right, John? Finally.
Yes, you did.
Okay, crime research.
Our website is crimeresearch.org, right?
Yeah, crimeresearch.org. Okay, we're not done, though. John, stay with me because we have so much more to talk about. I want to follow up on Andy Parker, too, because there's more to say about his story. And when we come back, I also want to open the phone lines. But you know what? I have to find the number. I'm in a remote location and I don't remember. So I'll get it. I'll be right back. Sandy Rios with Professor John Lott. Back in a second.